Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying
what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't kill you, makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I think it won't be a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Keeping on, whatever doesn't kill you makes you strong. This is American Sovereignty Radio. As always, we're going to have a great show this evening. It's our Thanksgiving week show. And Jennifer Montrose is not going to be with us tonight. We want to send our prayers out to her. She's really been sick the last couple of 3 weeks and really having a struggle with that. So she's going to be listening. And Dan Wilson is out on a Thanksgiving date with Barb this evening. So we're not going to have him. But we got co-host Glenn Atkinson from Saturday Symposium, good friend there in Dallas, is going to be joining us tonight as we bring in Dr. Tim Ball to talk about the hoax we know as global warming, man-made global warming. And you know, we never get tired of discussing this subject. I've been debating this subject with people online for about 15 years now. And I'll tell you what I've discovered over the years is there are so many lies being told that finding the truth is insane. Of course, oftentimes science is a lot of theory. and some fact. A lot of times people present a lot of theories as fact. Makes us into a mess. So we're going to dissect that all this evening. Dr. Ball is the author of The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. And a historical climatologist. He is from the great country of Canada, as is Glenn Atchison, our co-host this evening. So I'm going to bring you in real quick, Glenn, let you give your opening remarks real quick, and then we will immediately bring in Dr. Ball, introduce him, and start our conversation. Glenn Atchison, are you holding down the great state of Texas for me? Of course, I'm out here broadcasting live. Got a studio audience tonight, Glenn. I have got my Aunt Kathy here with me. Do that sometimes. Come down to her house here in Costa Mesa, California, and broadcast live from her living room, which is always a lot of fun. And then, of course, I've got Harper, the cat, who is staring at me wondering what in the world I am doing. So, Glenn, how is Texas? Is it holding up while I'm gone? Make sure everything's okay out there in the great state. Glenn, we're not hearing you. Glenn, for some reason, we're not hearing you. Are you on mute? All right, we will come back to Glenn. With that, we're going to introduce Dr. Ball. Dr. Ball, it is so good to have you here with us this evening. This is one of my favorite subjects. I sat and listened to some of your things that you've got on the Internet. You've got an incredible wealth of knowledge and understanding of this. So I want to pass it to you first. I always ask our guests to kind of go through a real quick kind of biography, how you got where you are, and then we'll ask you a couple of questions about that, and then we'll go on into the subject of climate change. So welcome, Dr. Ball. How are you? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity. You know, one of my people say, why do you keep doing this? You've got lawsuits, you've got people sending you death threats and all the rest of it. And the answer is very simple. Partly it's the truth, but the main objective for me is I don't want anybody to ever be able to say, I wasn't told, we weren't told. So that's what's driving me forward. But I was born in England, born near Stonehenge, as a matter of fact. And so whenever I filled out any form, and especially government forms, and it says religion, I've always put Druid on there, but nobody's ever questioned that, but that's a part of my background. I emigrated to Canada when I was 17, came on my own, and Canada's been, as with many people going to the U.S., just tremendous opportunities. But I was living and working in Toronto. I got moved up to Sudbury, which is the great international nickel town north of Sudbury, and there was a complete collapse of resources in the world at that time because of America deciding not to go ahead with nuclear power, and so the hard rock mining industry really suffered. And I was out of work, and so I decided to hitchhike to North Bay in Ontario and join the Canadian military. I ended up as air crew in the Canadian Air Force. And at that time, you could sign up on what was called a short service commission. What they wanted was a lot of people that were trained, in the case of the Air Force, up to squadron level, that is, combat flying level, that you could then go out on the street for 10 years or so, and if anything came up, they could call you back in and bring you up to combat level very quickly. So I signed up for that. I did 5 years and then a 3-year extension. In those 8 years, the first 4 years of it was involved in flying anti-submarine patrols over the North Atlantic, and I was actually actively involved as an operations officer on the squadron during the Cuban crisis, which was very, very interesting. But during that, one of the things we used to do was we did a lot of environmental surveys, becoming popular at that time, and one of them was we had learned how to identify whales, different whale types, and we used to record the type and numbers and which direction they were moving and so on. So I got very interested in the whole environmental issue at that time, before it even really became a big issue. But then I got transferred to Central Canada, and was on a search and rescue squadron flying right to the North Pole, covering all of Arctic Canada, and I did that for almost 5 years. And, of course, during that, that's when I learned a great deal about the weather and the climate, and just also, of course, how incredible a country Canada is, because most Canadians haven't seen even a fraction of it. And then after, I lost my flying category because of a hearing loss problem, and so I took instead of taking a permanent commission in the Air Force, I got out and went back to university, and I happened to think that's the way to do it. I went back to university when I was 30 years old and decided to study climate and climate change, and ended up doing a PhD in climatology at Queen Mary College, the University of London, England. So that's kind of a potted version of it. Since that time, of course, I taught for 25 years, taught climate, water resources, which is a very important side issue to the climate with droughts and flooding and so on. And then also I taught a course in political geography because I was interested in the impact of climate change on human history and the human condition, which, of course, is very much a part of today's discussion. And I should tell you that when I started out, Scott, that global cooling was the consensus at that time.
Sure.
Because the world had been cooling down from 1940 to 1980. So when I started my doctoral thesis in 68, that was the consensus. And then I published a great deal. I have 23 peer-reviewed articles in various journals, and I still continue to publish today. And of course, have watched the whole area of climate and climate science hijacked for a political agenda, and I've been fighting it from the get-go.
You've been keep on keeping on. And
yeah.
I'll tell you, it's such an important issue because it's one of the biggest lies that the world is being told, even governments of small countries. And I'm a full 100% environmentalist.
Yep.
Love the environment. And I know you are too. You and Glenn both are from that great country up there that is beautiful. Canada is beautiful. I love Yosemite. I'm a big Yosemite fan, and I like to take care of the environment. I like for us to take care of what I believe God created for us. But there is a huge difference between you and I being environmentalists who love the environment and hijacking an issue for political purposes. And I've always kind of believed that there was a big separation between the leaders who are hijacking, and then the believers who believe that that what they're being told is truth, and that's how we can help the environment. So we'll get into that. I think I've got Glenn unmuted. We had a problem with the Blog Talk Studio Monday, and we're having a little bit of a problem tonight. But Glenn, are you there? I want to bring you in real quick, introduce you to Dr. Ball.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Very good. And I'm gonna just let you throw in a couple of comments, and then we'll continue from there, Glenn.
Okay. Well, first, actually, I was talking earlier, but you couldn't hear me, and I was just saying I know you're from here in Texas, Scott, and you're over there, and I'm just wondering how are you and Canaforgia making out together there?
Well, let me tell you, I've been incognito here out in California. I got to really be careful. You see, Dr. Ball, I moved to Texas 2 years ago from Central California, and I really do. I love California. It served me well. I was born and raised here, came back here, lived for many years. But California and I broke up 2 years ago. You're on a vacation. I don't want California to think by any chance we're putting back together that relationship. But it is a little bit different out here than it is Texas for sure. Let me tell you, Dr. Ball,
can I just make a comment about that, by the way? California and Canada have about the same size population, and yet Canada is the second largest country in the world. So it gives you some idea of how much unoccupied space there is in Canada. And I remember on one of the searches I was on, there was a family from California. In fact, they own most of the Redwood sawmills in California, a very powerful family. They bought a sawmill up in Fort Chipewyan, which is up in the Northwest Territories. And the guy had bought his wife a Beach Queen Air for her birthday. And they were flying south from Fort Chip to Edmonton. And the weather was so bad, even the bush pilots didn't fly. But I guess they figured they didn't realize what they were getting into. And, of course, they went missing and the search started. On about the second day of the search, and I'm sitting in the pilot right-hand seat, the co-pilot seat, and this brother of the guy that we were searching for came up at noon because he went along as a spotter, and he was really angry, yelling and shouting and saying, "You're wasting time. You're flying around in circles. I'm going to report you. I know Governor Brown," who was the father of the current governor. So I showed him on the map what we had covered that morning, almost 10,000 square miles. He still really didn't believe it. So then we flew him over to Slave River and down on back along the Peace River back to Fort Chipewyan. And his only comment when he got out of the airplane was, "I'll never believe in overpopulation again," because he said, "You know, I never saw a single road, a single person, no evidence of humanity at all." And I said, "Welcome to Canada." And that's a very important part of this whole climate debate, because actually what's behind it is the Club of Rome claim that the world is overpopulated.
Right.
And that's what's driving so much of the environment and climate movement, and we need to put that in perspective.
Well, we definitely do, and it is a big, huge portion of this, and a lot of people don't know that it is also a big portion of Common Core.
Yep.
The people that are behind Common Core, the state's Common Core, it isn't. It's a big program. A lot of those people are believers that the world, we've just populated too much, and they really feel, if you really get down into the strongest of the strong, they really believe that we should wipe out two-thirds of the world population and get back to a much lower number. But like you say, Dr. Bell, you can even go places like California. I was raised at the base of the Sierra Nevadas. You can go for days and days and never see another person. And it's just all kind of crazy. And we're going to get back into that. I want this show to be I want you to take it where you want to run with it for the most part. We like to do that here at Contending for Truth Radio. The guest generally always knows exactly where to go with the show, because this is going to be a permanent archive, and I will be continuing to use this broadcast as the years go on in different articles and things. We'll continue to post that. And I really want our listeners to really understand the corruption that is involved in all of this, what the truth is about climate change and the climate and what it does. And like you said, you know, it was cooling for a long time. When I was a kid, that was the big thing, that we were all going to go back into the next ice age if we didn't stop. And at some point, you know, things started warming. And now for about 17, 18 years, it's really kind of flatlined for the most part. And there's a whole lot into that. So I'm going to pass it to you first. I want you to tell us a little bit about your book. And I want to encourage our listeners, The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. You can find the links on through Dr. Ball's website, so on and so forth. And we'll post those as they go on. But it is a deliberate corruption. This is not a bunch of people who think this is the truth. Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, had 35 major lies in it, the majority of the movie. In fact, England, it went to court. The government of England said, "You can't put this in our schools. It's got some major flaws and major lies." And that's really been the pattern throughout this whole history of this discussion, is purposely twisting the facts to arrive at a certain end run so that political change can be made that really has nothing to do with climate change whatsoever. And it's kind of insane. So if we kind of start there and we'll just run with it, we generally do kind of a roundtable discussion. We've generally got Jennifer and Dan here with us, but it's just going to be the three of us. So we'll just keep going around the table and having a great discussion. So, Dr. Ball, I'm going to pass it back to you there. Let's start kind of there with your book and the fact that this is deliberate, and then we'll bring Glenn in for questions, and we'll just keep going around the table until we get done.
Yeah, well, the book, I delayed publishing it for about 20 years because one of the things that's been exploited is people's lack of understanding, first of all, of science, because if you go to any high school or university or any group of people, about 80% of them are art students and only 20% have even a modicum of comfort with science. And they know that. They've exploited that situation. But the larger point and the reason that I delayed the book until now is because as people are starting to realize that what they're predicting and what they're claiming isn't working out, and I think it was the great scientist Richard Feynman who said, if your predictions are wrong, your science is wrong, period. Well, of course, their predictions have all been wrong. Every single one they've made since 1990 has been wrong. But somehow they keep trucking on. And so people are starting to, first of all, they start joking about it. And with the cold winters that we had, and then they came out and said, oh, the cold winters are due to global warming. Well, that was so illogical that even people that didn't understand science start to ask questions. And then the book is designed to answer the question that follows. Once you realize that this deception has gone on, the question is, what's the motive? Why are they doing it? What's the purpose here? And that's what the book attempts to address. And I did it both in terms of being accurate, because, of course, what they'll do is find one little flaw in the book and throw the whole book out. That's the standard game. But also had to write it in a way that the most people could read it and understand it. I could have written a much, much more technical book, but it would have been a waste of time. And so that's why I delayed the book. But let's go back to a very important idea. We were talking about environment and environmentalism. The environmentalism is what academics call a paradigm shift. Now, society has a certain view of things, general areas. They have a certain view. And every once in a while, that view changes. And that's called a paradigm shift. And what happens when a new paradigm or a new way of looking at things comes in, and environmentalism, of course, was one of these, there's a small group of people who look at the paradigm and grab it, usually for political reasons, but also for economic reasons. In other words, what political gain can I get out of this? What economic gain can I get out of it? And, of course, the most deadly is you're looking for political and economic gain, which, of course, is what Al Gore was doing. When the paradigm comes out, so when environmentalism came out, people said, hey, great idea. You know, there's a lot of good ideas in there, but people are afraid of change. People are basically small-c conservative, and the reason for that is because they know when change occurs, somebody's going to get hurt, and they don't want it to be them. It just might be them. So they tend to hold back a little bit and say, yeah, nice ideas, but how is that going to affect me? How does that determine my life? And so the small group that have grabbed the idea then start to exploit it. But that also, and this is what happened with environmentalism, the small group of extreme environmentalists, and particularly people at the Club of Rome, and we'll elaborate on that in a bit, saw this as an opportunity, a vehicle to introduce total political control and reduce the world population. Because, of course, this idea of reducing world population and controlling who gets to live and who gets to die has been around for a couple of hundred years now. It's in the idea of eugenics, which of course was very, very prevalent in the United States in the 20s and 30s. And of course, Hitler was a promoter of this. And eugenics is very much behind Paul Ehrlich's population bomb. And John Holdren, Obama's science czar, who is now the political front man for the whole Paris conference and the climate conference. So the idea of population control through environment became very attractive, as I said, to the Club of Rome. And so they grabbed the idea, and they took the moral high ground with it, of course. Because then they could come out and say, oh, we care about the environment. You guys don't care. We care about the children. We care about the future. We care about the planet. And you guys don't care. And, of course, then anybody that dared to question that was immediately put down and say, oh, look, they don't care about the environment. And it was very easy to marginalize people. But there were a few people like me that were saying, hang on a minute. You know, I got problems with this. Well, they had ways of marginalizing people like me, because when they came out with global warming, which was the first target, they said, oh, he's a skeptic. And this is how you marginalize people in today's society. You create a group with a name into which you can put them, and that then, for the majority of society, marginalizes them. I'll give you a very good example that your listeners can relate to. If you dare to ask any questions about any of the documents related to President Obama, you're immediately labeled a birther, which, of course, marginalizes you. And another very simple one is, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Well, sorry, conspiracies do occur. But it's a very quick and easy way of marginalizing people. And, of course, then in my case, when they couldn't say I wasn't qualified and they couldn't say I didn't know what I was talking about, then the next target becomes, well, who's funding you? Oh, you're paid by the oil companies. You've sold your soul and your scientific soul to the oil companies. So marginalizing people that challenge was very, very easy. So this is what's gone on. And of course, one of the people that's pivotal to all of this from the Club of Rome was a guy, a Canadian, sadly, by the name of Maurice Strong. And you probably know that name. Maurice Strong took the idea of overpopulation, which was the Malthusian idea, by the way. Thomas Malthus was a naturalist in the 19th century who wrote an article on essays on population and saying that the world's population was outgrowing its food supply. That was the basic idea of Malthus. And by the way, the greatest promoter of Malthus was Charles Darwin. In fact, Darwin took Malthus' essays on population with him on his voyage on the Beagle when he went to the Galapagos Islands. Malthus was completely wrong, but that idea that the population was outgrowing a resource became the central theme of the Club of Rome. And they produced a book called Limits to Growth, which basically was looking at how the population was outgrowing all of the resources on the planet, and therefore the only solution was to reduce the population. And so that's what's really behind the climate issue, the environmental issues in general, is the overpopulation issue. And by the way, just to put this in perspective to show how bizarre it's become, the chief advisor on climate and global warming to the Pope, Pope Francis, is a guy by the name of Schellenhuber. And Schellenhuber is at the Potsdam Climate Institute in the former East Germany, and he is a pantheist. A pantheist is somebody who believes that in what most people would call Gaia, Mother Earth, and that the pantheists believe the Earth is grossly overpopulated, that the maximum population for the Earth should be somewhat less than 1 billion people. Yet here he is as the chief science advisor to the Pope, and of course that's what's going to the Paris Climate Conference. That's what's behind it. So I'll stop at that point and see if you've got any questions you want to ask about that.
Yeah, and definitely, just to go into this a little bit more, I want to pass it over to Glenn. Glenn, you have any questions for the doctor? Liz, we'll throw you back in the mix here a little bit. Any comments on what he just said?
Well, it's great to have you with us, Dr. Ball, another fellow Canadian.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's an amazing discussion we're having here, and you know, and I'm so glad you're with us, because this truth needs to get far and wide, because there's just so much people that just believe all the crap that's out there for years, and you know, with Al Gore's movie and other things he's been, you know, trying to ram down our throats with everything, and you know, and yet he still, you know, flies around in his airplanes and whatever have you. So, I mean, it's just appalling to me to hear that. You know, this is believed by the masses still. I don't understand this. But I'm that's very grateful to have you here and, you know, basically show us what it's all about.
Well, part of the answer to your question, of course, is in what I said about most of the people are 80% are art students, and they don't know the science. And so rather than make a fool of themselves, they just quietly nod and listen and are afraid to speak out because somebody's going to jump down their throat. You know, it's kind of like everybody sat in a classroom, whether at high school or university, and you have a teacher who, if anybody asks a question, they immediately say, well, you know, imply, oh, that's a stupid question. And you can see everybody in the class saying, that's it, I'm going to keep my mouth shut, do my time, and get out of here. And I, in my classes, it took me half a year to promote. I really wanted their questions. I was genuinely interested in their questions. And I explained the value of those questions. So I can understand why people are silent. And by the way, it's very interesting when you look at the polling data, because that tells another complete story. The United Nations, and I don't know how they blundered into this, but they did a poll of over 6 million people in several countries around the world, asking them about what their concerns were. And they listed 14 items of concern, from economy and health and all of these other things. Climate change was 14th on the list of 14. In other words, it was absolute dead last concern of those 6 million people. Okay. And you see very similar results in the Pew Center polls out of the United States. Now, the Pew Center is notoriously left-wing in its views and its presentations, but they keep track of social concerns, and you can Google this for yourself through the Pew Center. They keep track of social concerns. They list 32 of them, 32 or 33. Global warming and climate change has been at number 32 for the last 6 years. It's not a concern at all to the people. So the question then becomes, why are the politicians all on board with it? Why are there 120 world leaders and governors from different states in the U.S. and most of the Canadian province premiers going to Paris to this climate conference? Why are the politicians? Because we're always told, oh, well, the politicians, you know, they listen to the public and they react to the public's concerns, but the public don't have a concern. And the answer is there's two answers. One of course is that they see an enormous opportunity to apply carbon taxes to control the people through taxation or through population. And we've just had an example of that here in Canada, where the Alberta government, which of course has made all of its money off of the fossil fuel industry, and yet they've now got a socialist premier by the name of Notley, and she's just introduced an energy plan that is an absolute disaster. It's taking the whole global warming due to human CO2 argument at face value, and saying it's the biggest threat to the planet, and has set a policy. The new Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, has done exactly the same thing on a Canada-wide basis. And, of course, we know that Obama has pinned his whole legacy to the climate change issue and is going to go to Paris, as he told Hollande, the French Prime Minister today that Paris is all about climate change and that's how we're going to deal with all of these issues. And yet, as I said, the polls show it is not of concern to the public at all. And of course, one of the reasons that this the politicians, apart from the chance to tax and the chance to control people, is they are still bullied by what I call the eco-bullies, the very, very few people who use this, and politicians are at the point where they're afraid to come out and say, I don't buy any of this. This is rubbish, and of course right away then the Guardian in Britain or the New York Times are jumping all over them, and it's still political suicide for them to appear not to be green, and so this is the disconnect that's going on with this whole issue right now.
Well, and it is, and you know my favorite quote of all time is
yep.
Socrates. When the debate
yep.
is lost, slander becomes the tool of the loser. And
yep.
it is exactly the way they fight this. If you and I say
yep.
that this is a hoax, they call us every name in the book.
Yep.
And Dr. Bell, if,
yep.
if all the evidence just all kind of panned out, it would be great.
Yep.
But we have got example after example after example of not just faulty evidence, not just
yep.
twisting evidence, not just lying about evidence, but blatantly lying about evidence. One of the big ones, the big one to me, is
yeah.
this 97% consensus.
Yeah.
Most people don't realize that the American Geophysical Union sent out a survey to 10,000 scientists. They received back 3,000 of those. Of those, 77 were climate scientists. And of those 77, 75 said that they agree that man is causing eternal destruction to the world. Now, only with common core math can you come up with 75 out of 77 means 98% of the entire scientific community, like Al Gore says, believes that man is causing the sky to fall. You know, when I was a kid, we had the story Chicken Little, and we laughed about that. But Al Gore is basically Chicken Little, and everything that he has said has been debunked over and over again. So I want to ask you this: you're out in the educational world, and you know a lot of people. What really is are the scientists, the real scientists, not the ones that are being paid and not the ones that are being yanked
yep.
around, but just the everyday scientist, professor that is really honest, what do they really believe about this?
Well, the 97% figure is very, very important because, of course, Obama's been going around saying that. There were actually three studies done that were deliberately corrupted to create that 95 or 97%. The first one was in Al Gore's movie, and what Gore did was he took a study done by a woman by the name of Naomi Oreske. O-R-E-S-K-E. And what she did was a very simple, almost grade 10 high school research. She Googled the word global warming and of course, claimed that she got 970-some replies. Almost all of them, 95% of them, were saying that global warming was real and was a problem and was caused by humans. And she published that, and Gore used that. Now, of course, everybody knows that the results you get from a Google search is determined by the keynote words that you put into it. If you don't ask the right questions and pose the question in your Google keynote words, and I play that game now because one of the things, whenever I publish an article, I make sure that in the title I've got keynote words that I know the Google search engines are going to pick up on and bring my article up to the front of the list. So anybody can play that game. Now, you mentioned the American Geophysical Union survey, but there was also one done by a Professor Cook in Australia at Queensland University. And there, they looked at 11,744 published articles, and then using their own definition, determined that 97% of them were pro global warming due to humans. But Lord Monckton, Christopher Benchley, looked at the original their original definitions, and found out was very like the American Geophysical Union one you mentioned, that actually only 64 of the articles that they picked out were pro global warming due to human causes, and even some of those were questionable. So what was published as a 97% consensus was actually a 0.3% consensus. And that article, by the way, was withdrawn, and there are now lawsuits against Queensland University, who are protecting Professor Cook and his false science. But, of course, the name of the game is to get the headline. They don't care what happens after after the headline is out there, because that's all that catches people's attention. That's all that sticks in people's minds. And so the 97% figure is out there. Now, when you start to ask about other scientists going along with this, I'd be prepared to say that the vast majority of them have never even looked at the climate science. They naturally assume that all scientists, or the majority of scientists, are honest and doing diligent, due, proper scientific work. So when the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the United Nations body that presents itself as the world authority on climate science, comes out and says something, they just assume that they're telling the truth. But let me give you an example of how wrong that is. And this is a quote from a German meteorologist and physicist, both. And here's what he said. I'll read it for you. His name's Klaus Eckert Puls, P-U-L-S. And he wrote, 10 years ago, I simply parroted what the IPCC told us. One day I started checking the facts and data. First I started with a sense of doubt, but then I became outraged when I discovered that much of what the IPCC and the media were telling us was sheer nonsense and was not even supported by any scientific facts and measurements. To this day, I still feel shame that as a scientist, I made presentations of their science without first checking it. And what I hear every single day, and I get emails every single day from more and more scientists who are going and looking at what's actually said, and of course discovering what this German meteorologist discovered. And hopefully that will evolve into enough of them coming out and saying, you know, this is corrupted, totally corrupted science, and is not to be believed. And by the way, another part of the deception, I don't know if you know about this story, Scott, but a Lord May, M-A-Y, who was the head of the Royal Society, the sort of a preeminent science society in the world, who at one point had Isaac Newton as their president, he came out and said that the Royal Society had decided that the IPCC and the global warming science was absolutely correct. He then went to all of the other science societies around the world and persuaded them to publish similar kinds of statements. Now, what those societies did was they didn't consult their members. They just simply came out as the boards or whatever they were and said, well, if the Royal Society are telling us this, it must be true. So they put out those statements. The only science society in the world that said, no, we will not do that, we will not publish that, was the Russian Science Society, or it was the Russian Science Federation, chaired by a fellow by the name of Yuri Israel. And Israel knew, because the Russians know that the climate science is fraud. Putin just came out the other day and said global warming is a fraud. And they refused, the Russian Federation refused to go along with what Lord May was arguing. Well, what do you hear? When the number of times that I've been interviewed, and the interviewer will say, well, all of these science societies disagree with you. And I say, yes, but go and look at what they're saying. Go and look at how it was done. It was totally manipulated.
Sure.
And so now some of the members of those societies are actually arguing with their own society to put out statements saying, no, it's wrong. But of course, the damage was already done. So that's just one example of how other scientists were persuaded to believe that what was being said was true.
And it really, I'll tell you, I was raised to look for truth. In fact, my mom and dad, both sets of my grandparents, said, you don't ever just believe what we say. You search for yourself and look.
Yep.
And we don't have that mentality in a huge segment of the scientific community. They just kind of rely on what is being said. And of course, that translates out into the world. I'll tell you, I do a lot of articles. The article where we actually met, where you posted in the comment section, hit about 2.5 million people. And I love that because I posted link after link after link after link of all these lies. The biggest one that's come up in the last couple of days, and I think this is kind of emblematic of really what they actually do. October, the hottest month of our lifetime.
Yep.
But what really cracks me up is if we look at scientific data, we look at just, let's just take a little piece, a little tool man created called the thermometer. We don't have, and of course these same people say that the Earth is 40 billion years old. We've got records, going back maybe 100 years of any kind of temperatures, and really only in my lifetime a large collection of temperatures, but we are just positive that October 2015 was the hottest month of those 40 billion years, and that the whole world is falling apart. And that's the kind of thing they do. Or another example would be Hurricane Katrina. When Hurricane Katrina hit, that was
the
world was falling apart.
Yeah, Scott, one of the things that's been happening is that traditionally, and what your parents and grandparents grew up with, was that you had the old guard who held the prevailing wisdom. They presented, here's the view of the world as we generally agree it to be. And then what would happen is the new young people would come in and challenge that and say, well, no, hang on a minute. What about this? What about that? And then that's how science and knowledge progressed. People challenged the old prevailing wisdoms. It was like the battle that Copernicus had with the church and the Ptolemaic system and so on, and Galileo the same thing. But what's happening in today's society, and it's primarily come about because government has taken control of education, and we go back to the Common Core thing again, but education has become indoctrination. This is what I tell you. This is what you give back to me on the exam, and I give you an A, and we graduate, and I put you out into the world. And so what's happening is all of the young people going into universities and colleges are coming in fully indoctrinated into the environmentalist view of the world that they want. And the irony of it is that the people that are challenging what's going on are the old people like me. When I look at Fred Singer, who's been fighting this battle for 40 years, Fred is 92 this year. He's still battling against the false science and what's gone on and been marginalized and everything else. So they've managed to turn the complete natural process of the new and young coming in with the new ideas and the new way of doing things, they've turned that completely upside down. And as I said, the young people are now indoctrinated rather than educated. And questions are discouraged. Don't ask questions. Don't be a troublemaker. And so this is part of the damage that's been done and why this is happening.
Well, and exactly, it's about a mentality, and boy, it starts in our schools, and we deal with that. I've been saying for 20 years, I've been saying for a long time before we knew what Common Core was. We got to pay attention to what's going on in our schools, because our children are being literally indoctrinated. And what really makes me angry about that is they don't seem to find the time to be able to teach them to read and write and do math anymore. They're spending so much time trying to mold their little social minds in a certain direction instead of challenging.
That's the whole point. Yeah, sorry, somebody, you were going to throw a question in?
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say was, it's very, and I hate to keep coming back to the Pope, but I hope your listeners understand that I'm not attacking religion or Christianity or Muslim or anything else. Christianity, as George Bernard Shaw once said, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's just a pity nobody ever tried it. What I'm attacking is, when I talk about the Pope, I'm talking about the structure of the church, which is completely different from religion and Christianity. And one of the things that you have to pay attention to, and as I said, they co-opted Pope Francis into appearing in Paris and supporting the whole climate change agenda. Now, who did that? Well, the answer is, of course, that John Kerry went and visited the Pope about a year ago, ostensibly to talk about the Middle East, but in fact it was to get him involved in the whole global warming issue as Obama's agenda. And he calls himself Pope Francis because he wants to associate with Francis of Assisi, who of course was the saint who gave away all of his wealth, every single penny, and even his shoes he gave away, and then went out and wandered around the world in bare feet and talking to the animals and that whole ultimate environmental thing. And that's the image that Pope Francis wanted. The reality is he's a Jesuit. And the reason that I raise the fact that he's a Jesuit is because the Jesuits is a very specific order of monks and priests founded by Ignatius Loyola back in the 17th century. They are the thought police for the Catholic Church. And it was Ignatius Loyola, and this comes back to our comments about Common Core and education, it was Ignatius Loyola who first said, "Give me the child and I'll give you the adult." And of course that the whole concept of indoctrinating the children into how they think as children, which guarantees how they will think as adults, and you control them. Who took this to the worst extreme was, of course, Adolf Hitler with his Hitler Youth. It was exactly the same idea. Now, what's interesting is the Catholic Church had never, until this Pope, appointed a Jesuit as a Pope, for precisely the concerns that they had about this controlling free will and free thought, which is at the basis of Christianity. So there's so much behind this that speaks to philosophy, control of education, control of minds, control of people's lives. And as I said, the fact that the Pope has got drawn into it. And when you if you want to see a really bizarre image of all of this, when Pope Francis went to South America over the last few months, and he went to visit the president of Bolivia, and the president of Bolivia is a Marxist, openly declared, which is fine, he's entitled to his political agenda, but he gave Pope Francis a bronze statue, which was the communist hammer and sickle with Jesus Christ on it crucified. I mean, if you want to see the confusion of ideologies and distortions of ideologies that's going on, there it was. And anybody can Google that picture. It's available on the Internet.
That is incredible. And it really does. It all comes back down to molding opinions. It all comes back down to presenting evidence in a certain way. We're coming up to the top of the hour, and I promised everybody we'd be a one-hour show this week for Thanksgiving. We generally go back two, but I would love to have you on again at some point in the future. I'm going to be doing an article on some of your work My climate change articles go crazy, Dr. Bell. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, here's the thing. We know when they start attacking you and they start attacking me, we know we're accomplishing something. So I want to bring Glenn back in real quick for any last questions he's got for you. We want to remind everybody the deliberate corruption of climate science. Look on the internet. I'm going to go ahead and put the links on the show page for our archives. I didn't get to do that this morning, but can you get that book at Amazon, Dr. Bell?
Yes, it's available on Amazon and on Kindle.
Okay, on Amazon and Kindle. We'll encourage everybody to do that. And you know, I'm a firm believer in buying the physical book for one reason. You can turn around and hand it over to your neighbor and say, read this. So it's very important. We want to encourage everybody to order the book. Glenn, you haven't had a lot of airtime tonight. We've been trying to let Dr. Bell just put as much information out as possible. And so I want to bring you back in to have a little bit of conversation with Dr. Bell. And then when we get towards the top of the hour, we'll go ahead and close it out.
Well, no, I'm intrigued by his knowledge and everything and whatnot. So any question I had a question and he answered it as he was speaking. So it was like, well, there you go. That's awesome. No, it's very. I'm amazed, you know, at what you know what you've come up with and everything, and it's incredible. And I do want to read your book, and I want to thank you again for coming on and joining us here because it's your knowledge is incredible.
Well, and of course it's what made me such a threat. As I said, one of the interesting things we were talking about epithets and marginalizing people. So initially, I was called a global warming skeptic. And I would say to people, no, global warming is occurring. The world warmed up from 1980 up to 1998, and global warming was occurring. What I'm a skeptic about is the fact that it isn't being caused by humans. And one of the things that most people don't understand is that for the general public, to call somebody a skeptic is derogatory. But if you're not a skeptic, you're not a scientist. All scientists must be skeptics, right? And then what was interesting was that they had a hypothesis. They said that if CO2 increases, the global temperature will increase. I knew that wasn't true, but that was the basic idea that they built this on. And they said CO2 in the atmosphere will increase because humans are producing more of it, and therefore we've got to shut that down. We've got to stop them producing fossil fuels and using fossil fuels. But then what happened in 1998 was the global temperature started to level off and go down, and Scott referred to that at the beginning of the program. But instead of saying, and by the way, the temperature started to level off at the same time CO2 continued to increase, what a proper scientist would do was saying, hey, my science isn't working. My predictions are wrong. You go back and look at your science. But they didn't do that. They moved the goalposts. They started calling it climate change instead of global warming. And then they also changed the epithet or slander from global warming skeptic to climate change denier. And I remember the first time I saw my name linked to the term climate change denier on the Times of England on the front page. I was called a climate change denier. Of course, they raised the ante because they were losing the battle, and the denier has all of the Holocaust denier connotations attached to it. But again, what's amusing about it is I'm anything but a denier. My whole career has been teaching and educating people to how much the climate changes naturally all of the time. But again, the public don't know how much the climate changes all of the time, and therefore they're easily fooled and misled by these people. So it's kind of an interesting pattern that's going on. And by the way, now that people are starting to say, well, hang on a minute, climate changes naturally, doesn't it? Well, what did John Holdren, Obama's science czar, do? He came out and said, oh, well, it's climate disruptions. That's become the latest term that they're putting out there. And, of course, the term disruption implies something unnatural. Anyway, I'm babbling too much here.
No, you're not. I love every minute of it and wish we really did have more time this week. It's been kind of a crazy week for Thanksgiving. I want to remind all of our listeners, you can also go to DrTimBall.com, and you can find a lot of his work. You can find all the links there, and I would encourage you also to go to YouTube and watch some of the videos. You have got some incredible information out on YouTube of different things that you have done. And it really, it's so important because, like you say, you know, most people don't really, it's not on their radar. But boy, when it comes to the far left, this is top of their radar, and it's all about gaining control. And, and I'm a firm believer in truth. And Dr. Ball, if I had searched all the last 10, 15 years that I've looked at this subject and found truth, I still wouldn't want to be making a lot of the decisions that are made with the EPA, and that's a whole other story. But I would be a believer if man was doing something. But the evidence is so overtly clear that man is not causing this. You know, we have something called spring, summer, winter, and fall. So we get hot and cold all the time. And it does. And we know that there was an ice age at one time. Most of our country was covered in ice. And that was a long time before the Industrial Revolution. And I remember the days when the earth was cooling and now it's warming. And it's going to cool again. And it goes, it's a cyclical thing. It goes in cycles. So I want to throw it to you. Any last things that you want to throw out there? We're not on a hard break to end this exactly at 8 o'clock, but I want to throw it back to you. Anything else that you feel is important that we need to throw out there?
Well, I think that point that you just made about the cyclical nature of climate is very critical to this because back in 1990, there was a conference between Soviet, as they were then, and Chinese climatologists, and I'd worked with both of them, and their knowledge and understanding of weather and climate is superior to the West by a long way, because the West has been hijacked by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And the debate in 1990 was that they were saying that the weather is cyclical and that all you've got to do is sort out all the major cycles of the sun and the cosmos and all of this, and cycles in the ocean and like El Nino and so on. And once you can sort those out, then you can understand the mechanisms and then understand the weather. The West got caught up in chaos theory. And that's, by the way, where that idea that if a butterfly flaps its wings in Japan, a week later there's a storm on the coast of California came from. And I tease the people that are promoting that and say, you better hope chaos theory is right, because it's the only explanation for why your forecasts are so wrong. At the time in 1990, that debate was seen as a political division between the communist world and the capitalist world, when in fact it wasn't. It was a very, very fundamental difference in the view about how climate works and how it operates. But I'd like to leave with one idea here. I used to think commissions of inquiry were great because you got somebody, there's a dispute going on, and you say, well, let's get the politics out of it. So finally you get a politician comes along, okay, we'll have a commission of inquiry, and everybody breathes a sigh of relief. I thought that was the case until I got appointed to my first commission of inquiry. And I learned that, in fact, it gives the politicians greater control to predetermine the outcome and to avoid the issue. And here's how its commission I was appointed to was a dispute over a lake in Manitoba, Dauphin Lake, and I was appointed to the commission, and then we got our terms of reference for the commission. They were so narrow, the politician and the bureaucrats had written them so narrowly that we couldn't possibly even get the data we needed to determine what the issue was. So I, at that point, said, you go tell the minister, Mr. Duncan, the chairman of the commission, you go and tell the minister, either we get full access to all of the information, or I'm going to go to the media and say, you're trying to predetermine the outcome of this commission of inquiry. Well, we got all the data, and I discovered that 100 years earlier, there had been a report by an engineer of what was wrong with the lake and what needed to be done on it, and that there had been three commissions of inquiry in the interim 100 years. Not one of them had been acted on because the politicians had used the commission of inquiry to divert the concern and the media and everybody else, and then, of course, they retire and take their big fat pensions and run.
and so the problems just went on and on and on. But it's in these commissions of inquiry and the terms of reference where conspiracy theories come up. So, for example, I was watching the greatest conspiracy on the Internet, and the Internet's full of conspiracy theories now, but the greatest one is the Kennedy assassination, okay? I'm watching Chief Justice Warren, who was the chair of the commission looking into the Kennedy assassination, and the interviewer said, well, why didn't you look at Jack Ruby and the mafia connection in Dallas? And Chief Justice Warren very calmly and quietly said, it wasn't in my terms of reference. I knew exactly what he was saying, but most people had no idea. What he was saying was, I was told, don't go there. Okay? Now, here's another way that the Commission of Inquiry helps the politician, because the minute they invoke it and appoint the commission, and the media come and say, oh, well, Mr. Minister or politician, what are you doing? Oh, I can't talk about it. Sorry. Commission's looking at it. I can't comment. So they're off the hook completely. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, they're controlling the whole outcome of the issue. That's what happened when they set up the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It is a commission of inquiry into climate change. And the public were led to believe that they were looking at all climate change. But the terms of reference they were given in 1992, climate change was defined as only to look at human causes. Don't even look at natural causes. But, of course, you can't possibly identify human causes if you don't know what the natural causes are and how much the climate varies. So in that definition, they limited the IPCC to come up with, and they wanted them to focus only on human causes, and that, of course, allowed them to only focus on CO2. CO2, of all the greenhouse gases, the main ones, which is water vapor, CO2, and methane, those are approximately 100% of the greenhouse gases, the gases that can hold heat in the Earth's atmosphere. CO2 is less than 4%. Water vapor is 95%. So you say, well, why didn't they look at water vapor? Oh, well, because they said humans produce a little bit of water vapor into the atmosphere, but the amount we produce relative to the total amount that's in the atmosphere is completely insignificant, so we'll ignore it. And we'll only focus on CO2, which is less than 4%. So it's like a doctor saying, I'm going to examine Scott, and, oh, to save time and money, I'm only going to look at this little wart on his left arm. And then the report comes out and it says, Scott is a wizened little brown object with a high prone to cancer. And that's the report that they came out with. That's exactly what they did in controlling the terms of reference to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So that was really how they've controlled this whole issue. And most people don't know about that limited definition.
Well, and exactly, and I'll tell you, my seven-year-old niece, who I homeschooled, she started the first grade this year. We sent her to public school, but she could tell you at 3 years of age how a tree works, yep. And she could tell you that there are these little holes on the back of the leaf that eat carbon dioxide.
Yep,
they eat it,
yep.
And our oceans eat it in a way, and it's, you know. It really aggravates me because I know how much of a hoax and I know how much of a scam it is. But I want to thank you, Dr. Ball. I over the last few weeks, had an opportunity to watch some of your lectures, read some of your articles, and you are so well-spoken on this, and I think that's important. I know some people that are experts on this issue who are very, very difficult to understand. You make it very, very clear so that anybody can understand it, and that's how we win this battle. We never let a show go by. Go ahead.
Right. It also makes me a threat. You see, because they couldn't say I wasn't qualified, although they never asked Al Gore about his qualifications. They couldn't say I wasn't qualified, and I have this ability to explain things in a way. And by the way, one of the ways I learned that was teaching a science credit for art students for 25 years. So I know how to communicate complex ideas in the way that people can understand without insulting their intelligence.
And that is so important. You know, Dr. Ball, I use this illustration almost every week. When I lived out here in California, I lived up at the base of the beautiful Sierra Nevadas. I lived on a highway, and I did my show from outside. I'm a little bit loud oftentimes to do it inside the house. So I often do the shows from outside, and I'd look across the street, look across the highway, and I saw a mountain, a little hill, and the creek, and the meadow, and the cows, and the wild turkeys. Then we moved to Texas. And we moved into a neighborhood. And now when I looked outside, I saw a bunch of roofs. And I know if I walked into 100 of those houses and had a discussion about just basic principles, probably 80% of those people would agree with me. But if I started talking about current events and issues, if I brought up maybe Benghazi, they might think it's an Italian dessert because people just aren't really paying attention. They get up in the morning, they get the kids off to school, they go to work. Of course, it's bad and politically incorrect to talk about religion or politics around the water cooler. So they really don't have a lot of that discussion and dialogue at work. They come home, they're tired, they do deal with Common Core and the kids and school. They have a time, you know, they maybe watch a couple hours of TV at night, a couple of sitcoms, maybe a couple of serials, and then they go to bed. And they really don't know what Glenn and you and I and Dan and Jennifer and many of my friends who pay attention all the time, they have no idea. And they really, they hear just little bits and pieces about climate change. And of course, nobody speaks up because, of course, they're going to be labeled anything from a racist to an idiot because they don't believe in that man is making the sky fall. And so it's so important that we get that message out. And I'm going to continue to help share your message. It's one of the things that I like being able to do is take somebody else's message and share it. When I get back to Texas, I'm going to be writing another climate change article and highlighting you in it. Because I really think that is really key to this. Is, you know, you're talking to the choir right now with me and Glenn. We've got to get this message out to the people that don't know what the truth is. And we keep doing that. We keep on keeping on. I want to thank you, Dr. Ball. It's been great.
Thank you.
A great conversation.
I just got one last question. Did the cat enjoy the conversation?
The cats are loving it. My aunt's two cats absolutely love it when I come out here. They are sitting here staring at me, wondering what in the world I am doing, talking on the phone in the middle of the living room for an hour.
Thank you for the opportunity, Scott.
Oh, thank you. And want to encourage our listeners one more time. You've got really three books out. You can find all that information on the internet. But the last one is The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. I oftentimes say I love a title, and I really love that title because it just really pounds in what's really, really going on. And so you've also got The Slaying of the Sky Dragon, The Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory, and then 18th Century Naturalists of Hudson Bay. So three of your books there. I want to encourage our listeners to go online and order those, whether they be in Kindle or, like I said, get a hard copy so you can turn around and hand it to your neighbor and say, read this. I think that's so important. We got some other great things coming up on Contending for Truth Radio, of course. We've got Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. We'll be on Saturday. Glenn and Dan will be doing that show. I will be bowing out and doing my thing here in Southern California on vacation. And then we'll come back again next week on American Sovereignty. Next Monday morning, we will be doing Conover You, the morning show with Rodney Lee Conover. Rodney's kind of talking about him and I going on the road out here in Southern California and doing the show from the road. So keep paying attention. I don't know. We start the show at 7:30. You see, Dr. Bell, it's 9:30 in Texas. But Rodney's out here in California, and it's 7:30. We start that show, and that is so early to do a show. But Rodney wants to do that, so we might be doing that. But we will be on the air next Monday for that. We won't be having ladies' Bible class on Friday. The ladies are all going to be involved in Thanksgiving. I'm going to be involved in Thanksgiving. But next Friday, we will pick that up, and we will be picking up with the 1st and 2nd Samuel. We'll be starting in the middle of the Old Testament and working our way to the end on ladies' Bible class. So I want to thank everybody for listening. If you're listening in archive, you can go down through the page, and you can find links to Dr. Bell's work. and to as well as his books. So I want to encourage everybody to do that as well. And with that, we still say we were going to end in an hour, and we still went an hour and 15 minutes, always hard. So I want to thank everybody. Of course, we're going to put it out with Keep On, Keep It On, my good friend B-Rock Country. This song says exactly the way it is. We keep on keeping on, because whatever doesn't kill you, it makes you strong. And that's why we keep on fighting, and we're going to continue to fight for the truth.